So, all right, well, I'm glad I actually got to follow up here a second to talk about something that's very relevant here, talking about a main part of a church or faith-based organization's infrastructure, and that is really focusing in on the clergy. So this is my disclosure statement. I have nothing interesting to disclose whatsoever, so not today anyways. So I'd like to think that I am literally preaching to the choir here, and that faith-based organizations are very widespread throughout our community here in the United States. We have roughly 335,000 institutions spread throughout the U.S., where about 40% of Americans show up at least once a week, according to Pew research data. So we know that in certain groups of the population, we actually have even higher rates of attendance at faith-based organizations. So for underserved groups, low income, ethnic minority groups, even rural communities, older adults, this is a really great place to deliver health promotion messages and health promotion programming. Now, among those vast number of religious institutions, the faith-based organizations, they are served by almost 600,000 clergy members across the United States, and many health promotion interventions that have been delivered in faith-based organizations have indicated the importance of having the clergy member on board as a main a gatekeeper, a key leader for the success or potentially the failure of health promotion interventions. So that is a very well-documented fact across the bulk of the literature. Now, nationally, we know that clergy tend to not be a very healthy crowd altogether. Unfortunately, we do know that. But we do know, and this is from some of my previous research, that healthier clergy tend to have healthier churches or healthier faith-based organizations. We know that clergy who are more physically active, who eat more fruits and vegetables, have a lower BMI, tend to have greater health and wellness resources at their faith-based organization, and therein they create a healthier environment in their faith-based organizations. We also know that clergy who report some kind of education about health in their career training are more likely to be an advocate for health and wellness in their faith-based organizations. So this is, for me, this was kind of my first clue. Hey, this is a place where we can investigate a little bit further. We know national data indicates that our theological schools or our seminary schools are training more than 25,000 clergy members annually. And we know here in from some of our previous research as well, clergy are really not receiving a tremendous amount of education about health-related issues during their seminary careers. Or many of the ones who are out now are not reporting that they received a lot. So maybe things are starting to change, but many of them saying, when I was in seminary school, we didn't really talk an awful lot about this type of thing. And as I said, we know that clergy themselves tend to be at high risk for a lot of negative health outcomes like stress, burnout. We have higher rates of obesity. We have higher negative health outcomes associated with a clerical career. So really kind of giving us this idea of maybe we really do need to consider the health of the clergy member as a potential here. And we can look to medical schools as a parallel model where many models have looked at the health and wellness of the medical student, thinking about them becoming a physician someday, and a healthier med student becomes a healthier physician who becomes a greater advocate for healthy behaviors in their own patients. So kind of the ultimate trickle-down effect, if you may. So really what we sought to do in this particular study was to figure out what is really going on in seminary schools to get a good understanding of where we at so we can figure out where can we go from here. So this was our main purpose of the study, was to really just to document what was going on in seminary schools across the United States. So this was a mixed methods study. This was a cross-sectional survey. We actually, the Association of Theological Schools has a website, and they have all the theological schools listed in the United States. There are 220 of them. For all the schools, we actually surfed the website of all these different schools and found the contact information of somebody who we felt would be knowledgeable about student activities, student services, curriculum, kind of looking at the general philosophy of the particular school as it relates to health. And we found a wide variety of folks. And what we did initially is we sent them an email and said, this is the kind of study that we're doing. This is the kind of information we're going to be looking for. We're going to contact you in a few days with this. And if you don't think you're the right person to answer the survey, then please let us know and we will send the survey on to somebody else. So after we kind of introduced ourselves initially via email, we took the next step and sent out the email. It was an online survey, which the email included a link to the online survey system. We used the Qualtrics program. Of the email surveys we sent, if people didn't respond, we did send an email, a very nice reminder email, 1 week later. And for those who still did not respond, either declining or we got maybe a bounce back email, we actually sent them a paper copy of the survey. So trying to potentially reach them in a bunch of different ways, maybe thinking an email invitation had gone into a junk email box or something like that. So we ended up getting back 10 paper surveys. So what that looked like, initially we ended up with 66 final surveys. Several were excluded for missing data, and our final sample size was 57, representing about 28% of the seminary schools here in the United States. So what did we ask about? Well, first of all, we wanted to get a good picture of what the school itself actually looked like, because seminary schools are tremendously varied in their size and the kind of students they serve. So we wanted to at first understand what their schools look like. So we asked if they had a denominational affiliation, which we had such a wide variety, we ended up reducing down to several categories, to include mainline Christian or non-denominational, Lutheran, Baptist, Catholic, Episcopal, and other. So we asked how many seminary students they ended up enrolling, what kinds of degrees that they offered, where their school was located so we could figure out if they were urban or rural and what state they were located in, how many faculty members they had, and then we actually dichotomized them into small or large schools, because we know that sometimes size is a limiting factor in being able to offer health promotion programs, just as simple logistics have shown us. We also asked about the students, so tell us a little bit about your student body, what percent of your student population is female, describe your racial or ethnic makeup of your student body, who is taking classes full-time and part-time or online only, and then we asked about some specific resources for health. We gave a list of things and asked if they had this particular resource, and then, of course, we summed up to be able to say how many health resources they had. We also asked about a couple of different policies regarding smoking, being able to smoke on campus, as well as food available in vending machines. We also asked about the activity friendliness of campus, trying to get us give us a little bit of an idea about how easy is it to accomplish physical activity. If you wanted to fit physical activity into your day, how easy could you do that? How many bike parking spots are there available on campus? So trying to understand how people are traveling to campus. And then we asked a little bit about health-related curriculum. And for us, this was important because it really gave us some indication as to how institutionalized health and wellness was within the seminary school. So we asked if they had any courses that discussed either a holistic view of health, linking spirituality and health together, self-care issues, which are certainly relevant when you talk about some of the negative health outcomes associated with being a clergy member, any skills that they were providing seminary students for offering health-related events, so if you think kind of like a program planning kind of focus. And if they did offer any kind of programming, how many hours of instruction did they offer for this particular type of topic? So we did some fairly basic analysis. This was not very complicated whatsoever, some basic frequency distributions and descriptives. We ran a couple of comparisons looking at differences between large schools and small schools. So our schools that responded to us, we ended up with our largest denomination was other. And when I say other, this was a kind of a wide smattering. We have one or two here and one or two there, and one or, you know, it was really kind of amazing to see the wide variety of seminary school affiliations that there were. General Mainline Christian or non-denominational was the second most common, and Lutheran was the third. Most were actually larger, they're having more than 100 students. Many were offering at least a master's degree in clerical training. Most reported that white was their largest racial or ethnic group of their student body. Underrepresentation of females, but better than it has been. If we were to look back even 20 or 30 years ago, we probably would not have seen even 40% of the student body as female. Many students taking classes full-time. We had kind of a couple of differences here with larger urban areas as well as moderately sized urban areas. We also had more in the Midwest and the Northeast than in some of our other areas. And the schools, on average, being fairly small, reporting about 15 full-time faculty. And I'm at Penn State. We have 15 instructors. We have 50 faculty in my own department. So it kind of really made me step back and take a look and really appreciate how small some of these schools are. So here we have, across the x-axis, we have all the different types of resources that a school could potentially report. And on the y-axis, we have the percent of schools that are reporting. The blue are the small schools, and the red are the large schools. So really the only significant difference here is that we saw that larger schools were much more likely to be able to offer on-campus exercise or fitness facility to their students. So. But overall, not a tremendous amount of difference. And that was the most common resource for larger schools to report. Many not having things like a student health and wellness committee or an on-campus health clinic or even a mental health counseling center, when, of course, we consider some of the stress and burnout issues associated with a clerical career, that is potentially another area of concern. So. Some other differences that we saw, if we just added up the number of resources that a school reported, we saw that large schools were on average had at least three resources to be able to report, whereas smaller schools only having less than two. Most schools not really reporting any kind of policy on the quality of food in a vending machine, whereas small schools actually were more likely to say that there's no smoking permitted on campus. Not a lot of other differences. For health-related curriculum, we actually saw that 16% said we don't offer any kind of health-related curriculum whatsoever. Some saying that actually 82% reporting that they do offer some counseling or some coursework on self-care, some on spirituality and health and holistic health, but very few on health-related planning. And larger schools were slightly more likely to report more spirituality and health training. So, and if you look here for the schools that did actually offer health-related curriculum, larger schools offered more hours of health-related curriculum for pretty much all the topics. So what does this mean in terms of implications for clergy training? So for the most part, we had really not had a lot of information on this up till this point in time. Previous research has shown that there kind of is a need in this area. And in this study, we saw that there is somewhat of a lack of health promotion resources available, but we have some areas where we can intervene. Environment and policy supports, as well as health-related curriculum. So policy and the environment, some very simple things that could be implemented in clerical training, promoting active travel to campus and increased bike parking just to be able to see if we can fit in some physical activity on the way to campus, healthier food available in vending machines. We do have that medical school model, like I said, that we can draw from, and actually the Vanderbilt medical school student wellness model, and this is a little fuzzy to read, but they do a nice job of kind of looking at student wellness across a variety of different dimensions and looking at having a student wellness committee, which, as I said, many seminary schools did not have too much of. So there's a lot of potential there to follow this particular model. A lot of downstream implications, having a healthier seminary student, as I said, leading to healthier clergy members and healthier faith-based organization environments, but also instilling this valuable connection between health physical health and spiritual and emotional health. This allows for longer-term impact and buy-in. If students learn about this as a part of their clerical training, they're more likely to carry that forward. We've actually talked with some United Methodist statewide conferences who have been very interested in this from an employee wellness model as well, as many of these clerical, these seminary students are going to become employees of a denomination's conference, diocese, whatever, and they have, you know, some interest in making sure that their employees are going to be healthy someday as well. So this opportunity here to intervene and looking at curriculum as well addressing health. So we had a couple of limitations with a low response rate and who we were reaching out to. I don't know how representative we were of U.S. schools in general. And, of course, we were using self-report measures. However, this does give us at least a little bit of a clue as to what's going on in our seminary schools and gives us potentially some places to capitalize to reach throughout our community. So a couple of references there, and I have to, of course, thank many of the people in my lab who work on this, and I'm not sure if I ran out of time or not, but I'll take questions maybe after, if so.